Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRTLP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. You can find us online anytime at kdrt.org/Davisville. I'm Bill Buchanan. I'm your host. Thank you for tuning in today. If you go to the Gibson House, a 19th century mansion that's been turned into a museum in Woodland, you can see some 19th century portraits of people who lived in Yolo County. They're just a handful of the people who lived here before us, not fully representative of the county then or now, or of Yolo's original inhabitants. But there are stories in these paintings, and in the painters. One of the six artists who is exhibited, for example, is Calthea Campbell Vivian, described as one of the leading artists of the West in her time. Another was an accomplished painter who, however, couldn't make a living at it, which ended his marriage. And his daughter became a famous opera singer in Britain. And her daughter, his granddaughter, became the youngest baroness in England. That randomness and mobility feel surprisingly modern to me. But who are the people in the paintings? What's it like to stand in the rooms of this landmark house and look at them, looking back at us? Probably some of them spent time in that house themselves. And how about the painters? Where did these paintings come from? And what do they say about Yolo County? And maybe about Davis, which is not in the exhibit. Our guest today can help us answer these questions. She is Sarah Bartlett, Museum Curator for the Yolo County Historical Collection, which is presenting Picturing Yolo County Exhibit, Paintings by Past Local Artists, through June 17th. She's joining us today by Zoom. Sarah, thank you for talking with us on Davisville.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You know, it is good, isn't it, to pause once in a while and think about the people who lived here before us, you know, to see them as individuals like we are.
Yeah. One of the things that I really like about portraiture is that it sort of gives us a window into how people wanted to be perceived and gives us a part of them, their lives that they didn't necessarily outwardly share with other people other than their portrait artists. So we can see really interesting portions of them through the paintings.
Oh, no, that's interesting because, you know, I think of a portrait as very public. And so when you say that they were maybe sharing things of themselves with a portrait, well, it's a little bit like if you were to tell a secret during this radio program. You and I are just talking right now, but lots of people are going to hear it. I mean, I'm intrigued by that.
When we're looking at portraiture, particularly in the 19th century, there was so much wrapped in to status and how people perceived you and your family. In the United States, we have the middle class emerging at this time. We have all these different ways that you can make money and that you can build a community. But you also have to make sure that your relationships with people, the way people perceive your family, are in good standing so that you can continue to make that money and people continue to do business with your family. So we end up with this really tenuous relationship between people based on status, based on how you can present yourself to the world so that you are perceived in the way that's most advantageous to you and your family. So in these portraits, we have sort of little windows into exactly how these people wanted to be seen by other people because of the way that they directed their portrait artists to make their portraits.
So this reminds me of marketing and branding, the way we'd call it now.
Absolutely. Your online social media profile, the brand that you create, if you're an influencer, if you're in the public eye, if you're a politician, the moments that you choose to share with people are really important to that brand creation. And these portraits are one of those moments for people in the 19th century. This style of portraits that are in the Gibson House are representative of the types of portraiture that was happening during the 19th century, but they're not the only styles of portraiture that were out there. Folk portraiture was happening around the same time in the United States, and those are a lot different than the portraits we see. So these are choices that these people made to have themselves be portrayed in this way so that they can impart specific information to their audience.
I went to go look at the portraits, and I do feel that I felt like a good sense of the people they depict. I mean, I don't know them at all, of course. But that is part of the power of a good portrait, isn't it? That it can convey a sense of the person. Even if it's a very deliberate conveyance, you still get a sense of the person, not just what they looked like.
Yeah, and that was sort of my goal with this exhibition was we don't necessarily have to talk about these people and what property they owned and where they lived to get a sense of them from the portrait themselves. The goal of the exhibition is for people to come through and use the skills, the tools that they're given in the exhibition text, in the brochure that's there, to read the portraits themselves and start to sort of glean information from them so that they can become an art historian themselves and start to learn more about how these people wanted to be perceived.
Partly what struck me, and who knows, maybe it was just my mood that day. I went on a Thursday afternoon. There weren't very many people there. It was quiet. But it almost felt a little like eavesdropping because those paintings are huge. They're as big as a poster, and the frames, of course, are huge. And I know the exhibit talks about that. But in many of them, they're looking right at you, and the portraits are rendered with enough skill that, I mean, it's almost as if I walked to a party, and rather than talk to the person across from me, I just stood there and stared at them. And it was an interesting sensation because obviously I wasn't invading their privacy, but I felt like I was getting information that I wouldn't get without being kind of rude if it's a living person.
One of the things that I like to point out to audiences when they walk through the museum is that there are two women depicted in this exhibition who were painted by their sister. We have Olivia Hodgen, who was an artist in the 19th century in Woodland, who taught at the Hesperian College, which was a college in Woodland, in painting and drawing. We have records from her teaching there from the 1880s into the 1890s. So she was teaching painting and drawing, but she also painted her sister, who was there, Mrs. Beamer, who was in this exhibition. And she was about in her 30s when that portrait was painted. And you can look at her face and look at the youth in her face and see exactly how Olivia Hodgen wanted to portray her sister. Right across from that painting in that same room, we have Sarah Griffin, who was painted by her sister, Clara Brown, also in her 30s. Also, in about the same year, and you can see every single wrinkle on her face. I like to point that out to visitors to think about, why did one sister paint this youthful glow and another sister paint every single detail? Was she trying to remember her sister in that moment? Was she trying to make sure that audiences knew her exactly how she knew her? What sort of drove Clara to paint her sister in this way? She wanted a portrait of her sister to last forever. It shouldn't be that she just didn't like her sister, although we may joke about that in the tours. She chose to paint every single detail, and that is really important information that you don't really think about until you have that portrait right in front of you.
One of the things that drew me to this exhibit is the fact that the painters were painting in YOLO and the subjects were all in YOLO. And I don't think I'd ever seen a collection of paintings of YOLO people from local portraits. When I think of painting these days in Davis or Woodland or whatever, I think of contemporary painters. You know, you can see their landscapes, you can see the portraits or whatever they're doing. This struck me as unusual. Now, maybe I was just overlooked it before. Maybe that was a hole in what I knew about the local area, but is this rare?
I would say it's really rare to have so many paintings that we can pull an artist from, directly from, and we can point that to a local person. We can say, Olivia Hodgen was teaching in Yolo County. Here is portraits that she painted of her family. We have this very local art and it stayed local. I think that is really, really special that we were able to have that. And there are other examples. I used to work at Iowa State University with university museums there. We have all these portraits of past presidents of the university who, are hanging in the university library. And the artist who did it because everything is meticulously written down in an institutional setting. So it's not that collections like this don't exist, but a local story like this for a group to come and collect all these pieces and really pay attention to local history. And also then to have an archives which supports the further research into local history and then continues to preserve this information is really special. I work with the Yolo County Archives. The Yolo County Historical Collection is sort of the 3D portion of the Yolo County Archives. And there's a lot of information that's being preserved locally, and that's Part of that is because people 50 years ago decided we really want to pay attention to Yolo County. We want to preserve the history of Yolo County. We want to make sure that these things stay local, and that's continued.
Well, that was really one of my questions is where did these paintings come from? I mean, one reason I thought a local exhibit like this might be rare is simply because they had to be created in the first place, and Yolo County 150 years ago was a much smaller place. But second, because as Neil Young says, rust never sleeps, things fall away. They get decayed, they get destroyed, they get damaged. You've got what, 12 paintings, I think, is it?
A little bit more than that, but yeah,
So
around that.
where did they come from? I mean, were these donated by families or?
A lot of them were collected by the Yolo County Historical Society back in the 1970s and the 80s. So I believe all of the ones by Olivia Hodgen came into the Yolo County Historical Collection from the Yolo County Historical Society. The portrait of Dulcina Hollinsworth was donated in memory of Robert Hollinsworth and sort of from members of his family who wanted to make sure that not only Dulcina's history was preserved, but also his history was preserved. Some of them are donated by other descendants. So the Griffins and the Hollinsworths were actually. They eventually became the same family. At the moment when Dulcina and Sarah Griffin's portraits were painted, they weren't the same family, but eventually those families combined. And so the Griffin family portraits were, I believe, donated by Merritt Hollinsworth. It's sort of a mix of local community members saying, hey, I met someone, they have this portrait, it's of this family. We have record of this family being in the area for a long time. We should see if they'll give it to us and sort of doing that community organization. And other parts of it are just local community members who have been in the area for a long time, who want their family to continue to be remembered for a long time and donate those things to the historical collection.
Now, part of the reason I suppose these portraits exist goes to the history of Yolo County. And this gets to something that I had mentioned at the start, that in the exhibit, there are no paintings from Davis. And I'm not thinking that's because there's some bias against Davis. It's more, but tell me if I'm right, I'm guessing that that's because of the town's relative size than to Woodland. I mean, 100 and some years ago, Woodland was the population center. And I was looking in the town history. According to the city history, in 1888, Woodland was called the richest town in the United States in proportion to its population. In other words, it had people who wanted to be painted and could afford it.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think that I didn't know. I have not heard that fact before. I didn't know that in 1888, Woodland was considered the richest.
You probably have to be careful with statistics there, because
Yes,
it's
absolutely.
I'm sure there's other ways to measure it. But the point is, there was a lot of activity, a lot of resources there.
So if we look at the history of Woodland specifically, we have a lot of people who settled pretty early on in Woodland. You have the Gibson family who was there starting in 1857, which is where the Gibson house is and was built. They built the Gibson house. We have the Beamer family who was there pretty early on. We have the Stevens family. We have, oh my goodness, lots of other families that are there pretty early on and work build up their farms and their ranches to be able to have enough money to then commission these portraits to be made. These portraits are in these beautiful, beautiful gold gilded frames that would have cost them thousands of dollars, even in the late 19th century. To sort of conceptualize that, the Gibson House property was bought for around between $700 and $800. And at the time that they purchased it, they purchased 300 acres of land. So a couple of thousand dollars is a lot of money to commission these portraits to be made in these gilded gold frames. So Woodland and the Quépe Valley, which had a lot of early settlers, had the money to be able to commission these portraits. The history of Davis is really, really complicated because there were a lot of people who were trying to claim land in Davis at this time. It's a very long history that we probably don't have time to get into, but the biggest landowner in Davis in 1856, when the Gibsons were buying their property in about the same time in Woodland, was one guy, and he had about 8,000 acres of land at that time. So it makes it really difficult to have a bunch of families popping up and gaining money to then in the 1880s be able to commission these paintings. when only one guy has the land
Yeah,
at
yeah.
that time.
Well, and of course, the University of California wasn't here yet. I mean, Davis was essentially a railroad town. It was a railroad junction, and that was it. But do a quick station ID. We are talking with Sarah Bartlett. She's the museum curator for the Yolo County Historical Collection, and we're talking about the exhibit currently at the Gibson House, Picturing Yolo County: Paintings by Past Local Artists of Local People from the 19th Century. I'm Bill Buchanan. This is Davisville on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. So let's talk about a couple of the artists. One I was struck with in the exhibit is Calthea Campbell Vivian. She lived well into the 20th century. And the exhibit makes the point that her style was more impressionist than the others. What can you tell us about her?
She was primarily a landscape artist, which is why I was particularly interested in finding a portrait by her in the collection. She was born in the South in Missouri in the 1850s, and her family moved to California in about the 1870s when she would have been in her 20s. But she dedicated a lot of time to the study of art. She studied at the Crocker Art Gallery in Sacramento. She studied at the Academia Colarossi. She studied in Paris. She studied in England. But then eventually, after the turn of the century, from about 1900 to 1917, she began teaching at the San Jose Normal School and then also at the Oakland College of Arts and Crafts. So she dedicated a lot of her time to learning art from a lot of different areas and then teaching art. So what really fascinates me about her is that she got so much education from all of these different academies. Prior to the 19th century, in art practice, you would go to these academies and you would learn that academy's particular style. You would learn how to paint as that school paints, and you would continue to paint as that school paints for the rest of your career. During the 19th century, we start to have the rise of the modern art movement, where artists start to go, hold on. Why do I have to paint in this particular way? Why am I making these decisions? Who is telling me I have to make these decisions? What does my art mean if I'm only making the decisions that someone else told me to make? So we start to have all of these artists start to go, hold on, I don't want to paint in that way. I want to explore what art creation actually means. I want to look at what I can say by breaking down the practice of art creation itself and see if that's more meaningful than the way that we've been painting in the past. So you have sort of the Impressionists are sort of one of the first groups to come out of this modern art movement and one of the most popular styles to start going, okay, we're going to do something different. We're going to break down brushstrokes. We're going to break down to see if we can do bigger brushstrokes and still convey information to our audience. And so the fact that this portrait, and portraits are primarily sort of this pictorial record, because at this time we don't really have photography in Yolo County. We don't really have photography that's widespread and easily accessed. So portraits are acting as a way to remember people. So to have this artist who has learned from all of these different places and all of these different academies come in and go, I think I can get at Mary Blower's a little bit more. I can get at her personality a little bit more. I can be more specific in my depiction of her by doing it in this style is really, really interesting, especially when other Yolo County families are saying, no, we want it to be really documentarian. We want it to be as close of a likeness as possible.
Yeah, you can see that when you look at the other paintings and then you look at that one. And to my eye, and I have no training in art, but to my eye, the person in the portrait just looks more vivid, more, I would say contemporary. And by that, I don't mean just a style, but more like an accessibility to the image, less formal, more, this looks like someone who, if I saw her, I wouldn't think, well, she looks like she's from another era.
I agree. I 100% agree. I think that the painting of Mary Blowers has a lot more personality than the others. I feel like you can really see who she is in that painting a lot more than in a documentarian style, which is interesting because the goal of that, those other styles that are modeled more after sort of an earlier style of portraiture, is to be as specific as possible in your depiction. But things get lost in that. And that's what artists of the 19th century and the modern art movement were trying to get at.
I felt like I was getting a quick summation of changes in the art world and how that's used to depict things a minute ago when you were talking about Impressionism. And I thought, boy, there's a lot going on there. And here we have these paintings in Yolo County reflecting these much larger themes, which I kind of find interesting because, to California in general, a place like Yolo is kind of a backwater. It's got a university, and we know the charms who live here. But compared to San Francisco, Los Angeles, Berkeley, San Jose, Silicon Valley, all sorts of places, we're not the sort of place you would think you would find someone who was considered a leading artist of the West.
I'm really interested in the way the relationship between Kathia Campbell Vivian and the Blowers sisters, who are also featured in the exhibition. The Blowers family is this local family. The Blowers farm used to be where the Yolo County Fairgrounds are. And they always had this interest in the botanical, the science of horticulture, the science of botany. And they did a lot of really beautiful sort of botanical illustrations that are in the historical collection. But they also did some portrait work. But women artists at the time were excluded from a lot of formal training in portraiture because they weren't allowed to do the figure drawing classes, which involved nude models. So to find a figure drawing class, a place that would allow you to take those classes as a woman, was really, really difficult. No doubt artists in Yolo County really benefited from having Olivia Hodgen working at the Hesperian College teaching painting and drawing because they could learn from a woman who could teach them other strategies to get that training.
At the end of the exhibit, you have some sketches or studies of marble figures, right? That's how a lot of the women artists got around that sense of decorum, I suppose it was, that you aren't supposed to look at a human figure. Those sketches actually were kind of affecting. Marble is sort of cold or can be cold, and you've got this sketch that's rendering it. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting part of the exhibit.
Absolutely. And in the sort of communication between the Blowers family, because the Blowers sister's stepmom is the portrait that Kethia Campbell did in the exhibition in 1896. About 10 years prior to that, she was writing postcards from abroad back to the Blowers family. So we have this long history of Kethia Campbell Vivian communicating with the Blowers sisters. And in one of her letters to them, she instructs them to take more modeling classes if they can find a girls' class. So we have this sort of mentorship from this well-established artist to the Blower sister reflected in the objects that have been preserved in the Yolo County Historical Collection. So there's all these really, really interesting stories underneath the portraits in the historical collection.
I want to ask also about, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, Louis Grund Joren. He's the one I mentioned who apparently, he didn't make enough money to keep his family together. Nevertheless, his daughter became an opera singer and his granddaughter became a baroness after they had moved back to England. He was born in Vienna, I understand. So also this mobility from Vienna in this case to Yolo County. But what can you tell us about him?
He is very, very interesting. And I'm glad that you sort of picked up on that interesting idea of movement. He brought his family over to California in the late 19th century, and he was sort of bouncing all around the Sacramento area, Napa, and over to San Francisco, doing art exhibitions, trying really, really hard to make a living as an artist. Originally, he was a classically trained violinist and pianist as well, and he had this very musical family, and so he was also teaching, offering lessons in the newspapers in violin, as well as in painting and drawing. So it seems like, based on what his ads in the newspapers and what we found in other sources online, he was trying everything to make his way as an artist in one way or another. And he was clearly also working on portraits and selling portraits to people, as we have these portraits of the Loganours, who were a woodland family in the historical collection that he did. But his daughter ended up going back to England in the 1880s or in the 1890s, where she was noticed for her operatic talent and married a baron who unfortunately suddenly died in about 1900 or 1903 when he fell in front of a train, leaving their 3-year-old daughter to be the youngest baroness England had ever seen, which was, quite shocking to have this man suddenly die and have his 3-year-old suddenly be the heir to a title, and also the fact that that was the only child, so she had to be the heir and she was a woman, caused quite the stir, and their family was quite famous for a while. But his Polise, who was the daughter of this artist in the exhibition, Louis, was a patron of the arts for many, many years after her husband died. And so, yeah, it's this really interesting connection to other places in the world that we have just encapsulated in these portraits.
You know, it makes me think if these folks were alive today, they'd be pretty well known, I would think. I mean, there's a fickle aspect to it, of course, but just the colorful aspect of the story, there's clearly ability, clearly interest, dedication to what they did. And I suppose that's part of the value of an exhibit like this, right? Is it gives us a chance to kind of re-engage these stories. You know, we're very, very near the end. Just a question for you. Why do you make this your life's work to bring things like this public?
That's a great question. So for most of my life, I really wanted to be a marine biologist, but I grew up in Iowa. And so that's not really something you can do in Iowa. And when it just was unaffordable for me to go out of state for college, I was writing these essays to get scholarships to go to other places in the country for school. And I was writing about wanting to have the ability. I was asked the question, if you could have any superpower, what would it be? And how would you use it to change the world? And I found myself writing about wanting to travel back in time so I could see how people really live, so I could really understand what the individual's story was. And as I was writing these essays and talking with my mom and having her edit them, she said, "Have you ever thought about anthropology?" And I thought, "I don't know what that is." And she's like, "Oh, it's part of archaeology." And so that was sort of the spark where I was like, "Oh, I couldn't even comprehend that I could spend my life learning about and telling people's stories." And that's what I really love about my job and all the experiences that I've had in my life. I got to excavate on Crete when I was 18. I've gotten to work in Iowa at museums and now in California in Yolo County. And I've gotten to tell a lot of really, really cool stories. And I love having the ability to pull these things, pull these objects together and say, no, there's really something interesting here. We can really learn a lot about these people and about these artists just because we found this one object in the historical collection.
Yeah.
And I love that storytelling aspect.
So, well, we've come to the end for today, but boy, I'm glad you're here to help tell some of these stories about Yolo County.
Yeah, me too.
We've been talking with Sarah Bartlett. She is the museum curator for Yolo County Historical Collection, and one of her current projects is Picturing Yolo County Exhibit Paintings by Past Local Artists at the Gibson House in Woodland. Sarah, thanks again for appearing on Davisville.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Bill Buchanan. This is Davisville, KDRT 95.7 FM, KDRT.org online. Thank you for listening.